Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
Life.
Love.
And health.
Palliative care, it's for the living. Now that may sound contrarian, as typically the words palliative care and hospice are used interchangeably. However, visionary organizations like the Cambia Health Foundation, based in Portland, Oregon, are actively seeking to create awareness and thus demand for palliative care as a holistic approach to care for seriously ill patients and their families, providing an extra layer of support that helps them to engage in difficult conversations while respecting their choices. I'm Christopher Springman. You're listening to Life, Love, and Health, and respecting people's choices is the hallmark of the work of our next guest, physician Dr. John Forsyth, chair of Choosing Options, Honorary Options, or COHO, C-O-H-O, in Medford, Oregon. Dr. Forsyth, it's a pleasure to have you on Life, Love, and Health.
The pleasure is all mine, Christopher. Thank you.
Well, you're quite welcome, man. I would like to be the latest to congratulate you on your Sojourns Award from the Cambia Health Foundation, which honors, quote, exemplary leaders in the field of palliative care. Tell me, what does this award mean to you and your work?
Oh, I think that it just honors a long-standing tradition in medicine, which is now regaining its importance in actual application in medicine. The long tradition of providing palliative care for people at the end of life when cure is no longer an option.
Now, what is palliative care? There's some confusion about that word, so what is your definition?
Well, palliative care is care that is focused more on enhancing the quality of the remaining days or months or years of one's life as opposed to the quantity. And it focuses on three specific areas. One is to relieve symptoms, to comfort people in the final stage of life. The second is to allow for a time of spiritual growth, which is important to a great many people. And the third thing is to facilitate and to allow time to enhance the personal relationships that form the most important basis of most of our lives.
You have said that we at COHO believe that when we take the time to thoughtfully consider such choices well in advance, and I think that's the key word, well in advance of healthcare crises, meaningful and fulfilling closing life experiences can and do result. Can you give me an example from your experience what those meaningful and fulfilling closing life experiences look and feel like?
Surely. I think that oftentimes they are prohibited to start with by simply the busyness of proceeding with intensive care as one nears the end of life and not allowing time for those conversations to happen. And so I'm thinking of so many examples of folks who, when given the choice about end-of-life care and given the opportunity to have those conversations with their loved ones and with their friends and with their caregivers, that it produces this reinforcement and awareness of the important experiences of their lives, what matters most, what has mattered most to them in their lifetime, and to have those discussions with those who matter most to them.
Why are people reluctant to have these conversations? Because sooner or later, you're going to be involved in death and facing these issues. Why the reluctance?
Well, I think there are a whole host of reasons, a good many of which are cultural.
Mm.
And in this era of optimism that has come about in American medicine in particular in the last 50 years, and with good reason, that all this technology and all these advances have produced both an extension of life and an enhancement of the quality of life for many people. But that optimism really does seem to preclude people from talking about the inevitability of death, and then of having the opportunity to talk about the things that are important to them. So that by the time the end of life is near at hand, say in the last 3 to 4 weeks of life, many people have lost the capacity, for instance, the mental capacity to have those kind of discussions. And so those discussions to be most meaningful, and it takes time for those to happen. It's not something that happens in an afternoon or an evening. For those to have time to happen, they need to start well in advance of the final chapter.
Well, you said the key word advance. In fact, there is a process called advanced care planning, which is certainly part of your work at CoHo, so that each person facing the final stage of life can do so with the greatest possible dignity and respect. We're speaking with John Forsyth, chair of Choosing Options, Honoring Options, or CoHo, in Medford, Oregon, and the winner of the 2012, or a winner of the 2012 Sojourns Award from the Cambia Health Foundation. Let's talk about advanced care planning. What is it?
Surely. Well, it's basically three things. First of all, having these conversations about what the true options are, of being truly informed about what the medical options are, and being informed about what the option of palliative care is and how that can integrate into, and it's not necessarily an either-or response to traditional, you know, intensive medical care.
Right. Now, there's something called an advanced directive. What is
that? And that's the second part. And so advanced care planning has three parts. One is I think, and the most important by far, are the conversations. But then the documents really help, especially when the conversations have not included important members of the family and where there may oftentimes be a difference of opinion about what should be done, especially for a person who hasn't written things down. So it really helps for a person to have that conversation with themselves and then to write down in an advanced directive, which is a written form, what one's preferences are for care at the end of life.
You know, you have said that aggressive treatment often is applied by default, counter to the wishes of many elderly people. Why does that occur?
I think that occurs because we don't start these conversations early enough. Yeah.
Well, I've been on both sides of this with my parents, who are deceased, and my wife's parents. And I will tell you, it is night and day in terms of doing this right. And my father died of a brain aneurysm. I was in the ICU when he flatlined. And it was a very, very unpleasant experience. None of us were prepared for this. On the other hand, my wife's father died at home when she was there. And we both have totally different recollections in retrospect of the experience. Mine is very negative. Hers is joyous. It's beautiful. It's very, very positive. And frankly, I envy her.
Yes. Yeah.
And ultimately, life is for the living, and that's what we take away from it, and ultimately what we live with.
Well, I think that's true. And so the implications of having the conversation and of advanced directive are not only just for the dying.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it has a great deal to do to say about the quality of life for those who survive.
Because that is the memory that we carry with us, and also that we convey to our children, either in words or deeds. And frankly, that's how children learn what the end of life is all about.
And absolutely. And so oftentimes in this day and age, the experience of death is removed from children and young people. And so they arrive at, you know, the middle and latter part of their lives when their parents are dying without any previous experience with dealing with that situation.
Dr. John Forsyth, thank you so much for joining us today on Life, Love, and Health. It's been a pleasure.
It's been my pleasure, Christopher. Thank you.